This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak to Jerry Flanagan, who's a consumer advocate at the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights in Santa Monica, California. Welcome to Utopia Media's California Politics Today.
Thanks for the opportunity, Mark.
The primary impetus for why we're speaking right now is LARX program. Can you tell us where that came from, what it is, and what your group has been doing around it in recent days?
Sure. The idea for a city-based prescription drug bulk purchasing program, or LARX, which is the Los Angeles Prescription Drug Bulk Purchasing Program, was conceived by our group and authored by then-councilman Antonio Ragosa back in March of 2004 at a town hall event that we held in Los Angeles. And we had convened 250 people in City Hall to talk about how Los Angeles can start the process of making healthcare more affordable to more Californians. And, you know, a lot of the discussion focused on, we can't wait for Sacramento to act, we can't wait for the feds, what can Los Angeles do? One of the ideas that we've been working on for some time on the East Coast and county level and state level is the idea of prescription drug bulk purchasing, which at its essence is the sort of quintessential marketplace argument of the bigger the buyer, the better the price. And with the idea of doing, ideally, if you had a statewide bulk purchasing pool that includes the leveraging the purchasing power of every Californian with 35 million people, we could get even a better discount than what Canada receives with 30 million people.
Now, is there any reason why this bulk purchasing needs to be organized through local or state governments? Is there any impediment for just people getting together on the internet or in groups and organizing themselves to do this?
This is what's really exciting about this policy, I find, is that no, it doesn't require a local government action. What you do need to do has some kind of an organizing point. The quintessential sort of operation is that someone or something is negotiating a price based on some huge population or pool.
Right.
So it requires a place of coming together. It could be virtual, but it requires people to essentially say, this entity is buying on behalf of me.
Is there any reason why the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights can't organize itself to do this?
Yeah, we could certainly, and we've considered this, and we're looking at doing a new other program in the Central Valley, incorporate a nonprofit or do it under our existing umbrella and start the process and get a new, we'd probably want to get a new board that reflects the particular program. The reason that we're really excited, though, with working with Los Angeles and cities and counties is that there is a lot of benefit of the synergies of working with existing county programs to do outreach. And the biggest roadblock to public programs, but particularly any kind of something we need to have people sign up, is just getting the awareness factor.
Okay, now don't governments, including the city of Los Angeles, already engage in bulk purchases of drugs for their own health plans?
Shockingly, shockingly no, but that's only half right. The city of Los Angeles and most cities provide health insurance for their workers through HMO plans.
Right.
So you essentially get a prescription drug benefit bundled with your HMO coverage. Now, HMOs bulk purchase drugs or essentially through their own plans.
Right.
The trick is they get a discount, but they don't pass it on. As a result, they raise our premiums while the HMOs take advantage of the fact of rebates and discounts from the drug companies. So the idea of bulk purchasing is operating already in the marketplace. However, individuals don't have access to these pools. So ideas like LARX or, as you pointed out, a nonprofit umbrella purchasing pool provides an access point to pharmacy benefits managers and these large companies that provide bulk purchasing for in big employers in the city of Los Angeles, et cetera.
But again, so what you're saying, though, the crucial element is the awareness factor.
Yeah.
And you're saying that governments are somewhat advantaged as an organization.
Irrelevant of what the political party you come from, I think that no one in Los Angeles would say that Viragosa is not very good at promoting the city and getting national media attention. So, you know, using that
the value added of
that and promoting a program, and you know, he took a he took the initiative to champion this program and pull that under his umbrella of issues. There's a huge value to that, obviously.
Was that also a value to him? Did that help him get elected because he was associated with this kind
program? At some level, I would assume anytime you talk about issues like, you know, that hit the sort of the mainstream of issues that unfortunately get ignored a lot, like health care and prescription drug prices, you have to assume that galvanizes people.
Okay, so say a few more details about the program, when it was instituted, and what the plan is to implement it.
So the plan was passed by the Los Angeles City Council in a public meeting back in March 4th of this year, unanimous. The next step is that we're in the final stages of putting together the RFP, which is the Request for Proposals, or the business plan for essentially hiring one of these benefit managers that come in and institute the program.
Called PBMs, Prescription Benefit Managers.
Or there's two. PBMs have gotten trouble in the past for lack of transparency. There's also these other types of benefit managers, like a nonprofit group called Navitus up in Wisconsin, which was created as a private company to run the state of Wisconsin's prescription drug bulk purchasing program.
BadgerRx. I interviewed the guy from Navitus, actually.
Fascinating program. The great thing about Navitus is that they pass all the rebates and all the discounts on. So because it's a city program and we're utilizing the benefits of competitive bidding, and we have there's a tiering process in the RFP, so essentially whatever company comes back and can guarantee the best discounts for the most people, that they will service the program.
Is Navitus bidding on that, or likely to bid on it?
I can't tell you what Navitus would do. We've talked to them about it, about the program, so I would assume they would. It's really right in line with what the company's doing now.
Okay. So what's the timetable, and
I'm literally expecting a letter from the city any day now to say that they're scheduling the interim meeting with the city council to announce the RFP, and, you know, I would hope that we'd have the RFP completed in the next month and then send it out, and then ideally have the program underway within the next 2 to 3 months.
Are there any legal impediments, any groups trying to block by litigation what the people of Los Angeles have voted for?
No, there hasn't been. You know, we've had certainly inquiries from pharmacies wanting to know if they can be included, because the pharmacies, obviously, when you talk about a huge buying pool, no one wants to be on the outs.
Right.
They want to be in, which is good. I think that's definitely good for the program.
How would either chains or smaller pharmacies be involved with this program?
Because we're going to use a benefits manager, these benefit managers already have in place networks of pharmacies.
Right.
One of the requirements of the PBM, of the RFP, that request for proposal, is that whichever entity services the contract must have a very diverse network of pharmacies, both local mom and pop and chains. As we've gotten into this, it turns out that all these big pharmacies, basically all the big networks, include almost every pharmacy.
Right.
So the goal is that in
so essentially people would go to the pharmacies they now go to.
Right.
But they would essentially get the drugs at lower prices.
Right. You'd get what will happen is you'll be issued a card, and one of the things we're looking at is that Nassau County in New York, literally, they have a county-level program, literally mailed a free card for the drug program to everybody in the county.
Right.
So everyone got one, and then you can go into the store, and when you pick up your drug and you take it to the counter, or if it's over the counter, they hand it to you, and your card will be swiped, and that'll indicate that you are part of the purchasing pool, and then instead of paying $60, or $80, you get a discount initially of about 20 to 40%. The good news is that the larger the pool gets, the more people that join. Every year when we renegotiate contracts, we can demand lower prices.
Now, I don't want to get too far afield, but didn't the federal government under Medicare institute some sort of program like this?
No, it's shockingly, Medicare, which includes 41 million members,
right,
was banned by the federal government from negotiating discounts. And this was under pressure from the drug companies. What's really shocking about this ban is that the Department of Veteran Affairs, which represents veterans, has about 39 million members, and it's been negotiating bulk discounts on drugs for 2 decades, receives discounts even better than Canada because it's so large. But the Medicare program, which is larger, was literally banned from negotiating bulk discounts.
But by federal legislation?
By federal legislation. And what they did to this is like, well, we're not going to let Medicare negotiate drugs. Instead, we're going to let our friends, the HMOs, take taxpayer money to buy drugs at full price from the drug companies to provide to seniors. Now, the end effect and why people should care is that, you know, we're going to spend $700 billion over the next 10 years on Medicare program, and seniors still have to pay, on average, $2,500 out of pocket each year. If we actually allowed the Medicare program to bulk purchase, we could spend less and get a lot more coverage for seniors. And we're hopeful, though, that, you know, as we push for changes in the federal Medicare law, though, that state-level programs and also LARX can become a model for the types of changes we need to see federally. Clearly, a 300 million member purchasing pool for all of the United States would be a very powerful negotiating force. We're not nearly there yet, but that should be what the policy, that's what the policy is focused toward, starting with Los Angeles, Southern California, California. But the idea is that the bigger the buyer, the better the price, and a U.S.-wide pool would be the best best for consumers. One other point, though, is really exciting about this program is that it appears that from the very beginning of the program that LARX will be available throughout Southern California, not just restricted to Los Angeles. And that's because, again, these discounts are and rebates are based on participating pharmacies, which are worked out regionally. So the card very well will likely be available in Ventura County, San Bernardino, all the way down to the Mexican border, right from the beginning of the program.
So and what's the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights doing to facilitate that?
Well, we've been personally, I've been involved with the idea of bulk purchasing for about 5-6 years now. So we've been working very closely with the city and some consultants that have been hired to the Mercer Group to kind of come up with the RFP and design how the program would work. So really focusing on the policy stuff. In addition to that, we have also already developed a internet-based animation and a sign-up process so people can sign up for the program, then we can let them know where to pick up their cards when the program is up and running. The goal here is to kind of pre-sign people up so that from day one we can demonstrate to the purchasing companies that we have a lot of people interested and even demand a better rate.
That's people who live in Los Angeles, the city, or the county, or how wide
an
area?
We actually are pushing it through Southern California, saying that, you know, it's underway. We'll let you know when the program's up. The appearance is that we won't have to. It will be open much broader than just Los Angeles. We're also working to develop other purchasing pools in places like Central Valley and Northern California.
What's the URL for that site?
www.consumerwatchdog.org. And right from the homepage on the right column, you can watch an animation that we produced about that talks about how drug companies have kept drug prices too high and use their political power to influence Congress, and then describes and talks about how LARX works.
Okay.
How bulk purchasing works.
Now, on the intermediate level between the city of Los Angeles and the federal government is the state of California.
Yes.
And there are two drug discount initiatives on the ballot in the special election, which may or may not take place. And if it does, people will be able to vote yes or no on either or both of them.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell us about Prop 78, Prop 79, and how they fit into the worldview of your organization in terms of getting people prescription drugs at lower price?
Well, Prop 78 is the one people should definitely vote no on. It's a industry-backed, a drug company-funded initiative that is designed to inoculate drug companies from real reform. California voters are very savvy, so I think anytime people realize that the industry, the drug industry, is supporting an initiative that's supposed to provide lower-cost prescription drugs,
right,
that's when the bell should go off and the red flag goes up. Now, the details of the initiative essentially create a voluntary discount program.
And that's voluntary, not necessarily on the part of the drug buyers, but it's voluntary on the part of the drug sellers.
Right,
isn't it?
Right. And, which is, frankly, you don't need a law to do that. These companies can provide voluntary discounts now. The other thing that the companies have been promoting a lot on their commercials is that they're supported by some disease groups like the Epilepsy Foundation and Alzheimer's Foundation. Well, we did some research last week, and I couldn't find a single supporter on that list that had not received substantial money from the drug industry. So these companies, you know, that it's the drug industry has piped in I think something now close to $65 million now into California to promote Prop 78. A huge amount of money. And
well, I did an article a few days ago about this on actually it was published yesterday, and it adds up the money that's been contributed to the Yes on 78, No on 79 campaign. And there's $37 million between January 1st, 2005 and June 30th, 2005 to one of the campaigns. And the other campaign called Californians for Affordable Prescriptions contributed about $4 million. So $41 million have been contributed, all of it either from pharma or the drug companies.
Yeah, I'll leave it to you and the Prop 79 folks to figure that out. I thought I saw a release last week from Prop 79 folks that were saying something around $60 million. I could be wrong.
Well, in an interview I did with Anthony Wright, who speaks for Prop 79, he said he expects $72 million to be spent.
It's a lot of money.
Right.
The point being is that for all intents and purposes that the drug industry has almost an unlimited amount of money to spend in California.
Well, that would be based on the high drug prices they charge.
Right, and they've created a system where they can charge whatever they want. They have bought off politicians at the state and federal level, and because of that, they have huge amounts of monies to invest in initiative campaigns. So Prop 78, we're pushing a no vote, and not only is it a bad policy for California, it is an insult to the initiative process. So it's really important, I think, that people vote no, not only to make sure we can have a real reform effort in the future, but also to send a message to the drug companies that just because you have a bunch of money, you can't fool the people of California. I will also add, though, that Prop 78 has a poison pill element to it that would make it very difficult in the future to pass real prescription drug reforms.
Prop 78 does?
Yeah.
What's that provision?
It requires a two-thirds vote of the legislature to implement other prescription drug reform measures
or alter
the Prop 78 program.
I haven't seen any mention of that in the ubiquitous ads they're running.
Yeah, right. It's in the fine print at the end.
Okay, well, I'll look into that, which means that any program like the bulk drug purchasing program that you advocate as a general principle would be blocked unless it could get two-thirds vote in the legislature.
I don't know about that because, see, the difference would be that the Prop 78 sets a high bar for provisions coming out of the legislature.
Right.
But we're not coming out of the legislature with LARX. So, you know, really with the LARX is it's really an en route around a roadblock and reform in Sacramento. So, you know, we haven't... The general opinion is that 78 wouldn't block these city-based programs.
But it would block a state-level program.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, speaking of state-level programs that involve group purchase, what about Prop 79?
Yeah, Prop 79 and Prop 78 are similar in their core, which is that they essentially would say that populations of that up to 400% of the poverty level for Prop 79 will get mandatory discounts in the case for 79, voluntary discounts for Prop 78. The way this would work, it says that the state Medicaid population, which is a government-run program that provides prescriptions and health care for low-income individuals, the Prop 79 says drug companies, if you refuse to give drug discounts to people up to 400% of the poverty level, then we're going to make it very difficult for you to sell drugs to the Medicaid population. And the reason that drug companies... But the reason that is supposed to strike fear into drug companies is that Medicaid program buys $5 billion or some dollars each year in drugs, so it's a very valuable market.
So that's seen as an incentive to the drug companies to offer that discount to a larger group.
Right, and it's essentially how it's described often in policy, and people maybe have been curious what they're talking about, but the advocates call this the hammer, that if you don't give us a discount, we're going to whack you over the head and make it difficult to sell to the Medicaid population.
Okay, now two questions. First, are you saying that Prop 79 is not essentially a bulk buying project the way LARX is?
No, it's not bulk buying. The key difference is that Prop 79 does not base a price on a market base of how many people are in it.
Right.
It essentially says you have to give us the same price that they're getting, or we're going to make it hard for you to sell to the Medicaid population.
And when you say make it hard to sell to the Medicaid population, this is what Prop 78 spokesperson Denise Davis says is tantamount to taking them off the formulary.
Well, it doesn't
take them
off.
Is that the same thing or not?
And again, to keep it... in the realm of sort of what people can digest. It's going to get very complicated here. But essentially, in Medicaid, the program, in order to get listed, what Prop 79 would do is require drug companies who refuse to provide discounts to the 400% of poverty population. That if drug companies refuse to do that, then their drugs will be put on what's called a pre-approval list,
right,
which means that before they can sell to the Medicaid population, they have to get pre-approval.
Pre-approval of the drug, or of for each of the millions of people who buy them?
For each drug, before each drug can be sold to that Medicaid population.
Okay.
The effect of this is slowing its process down, and anytime you slow the process down, or it could also halt it altogether.
No, you're right. Is this where they get the justification for having an image of a unattractive-looking bureaucrat stamping pieces of paper rejected and handing it to poor people and saying you can't get your drugs?
I don't know how they can justify the ads in general, but I thought in the ads they were talking about that the drug companies were saying Prop 79 was some new bureaucracy.
That's right. They're saying it adds a huge government bureaucracy to the process.
But in each program creates a new government program, so they're kind of arguing in itself. The Medicaid program prior approval process already exists.
Right.
The Prop 79 would just trigger it in a different way. So
really, wouldn't add a new program. It would just provide more opportunities for the existing program to function.
Right. And sophisticated viewers and listeners know is that the ads that the drug companies run don't necessarily have anything to do with the details. In fact, they don't. What the company is harkening back to are these very successful campaigns run against the Clinton plan back in 1992,
right,
with a couple sitting around the table.
Right.
They know that after 25 years of running campaigns convincing people that government-run health care programs are inefficient, that they can create this image and therefore attempt to get people to vote no. It's totally disingenuous because at its core, in that aspect, the two programs aren't that much different, and they don't create new programs. They deal with existing programs.
Does your group have any intention to do any initiatives along lines that you like?
We have written an initiative based on a statewide bulk purchasing pool. We have it back from the Attorney General with title and summary, which means it's now ready to circulate.
You're going to be careful to circulate it with the same language that you submitted for the title and summary,
aren't
you?
Yes, we're not going to make that very basic mistake.
Right.
Hopefully.
What's the timetable?
Well,
for
we
that?
Originally planned to do it now. We have a lot of concerns organizationally with the whole idea of a special election, and so we didn't want to bring it to the special election.
Right.
So the plan would be to circulate it for a March or November 2006, most likely November 2006.
And what's the impact, either legally or politically, of the passage of either or 70, either 78 or 79 on that?
Well, none. There would be no political or legal problems.
Right.
I mean, no legal problems, certainly.
So whatever happens with those?
Yeah, it doesn't. It won't affect it. And who knows? You know, with the state election, the voter concern with this, you know, the November election is so high, and it's unclear what's going to happen.
Do you think there's going to be a special election in November?
So I have to imagine. You know, the Governor Schwarzenegger's financial backers so badly want to bring this bad drug initiative to the ballot, and also the initiative that would weaken labor union political involvement.
What about the highly vaunted Proposition 77 that's supposed to reform the political process in California? Are you saying that Prop 78 and the so-called Paycheck Protection Initiative are what's driving the election now?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that clearly the teacher tenure bill that make moves, you know, tenure from 3 to 5.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, that kind of a change, to spend that much money on a ballot initiative is just really just inane, and I think the value of that is just not, doesn't exist. I mean, clearly, the money is pushing for the drug initiative. You know, the drug industries are heavily invested in Schwarzenegger, and also the big corporations who want to weaken the labor unions. The redistricting initiative has been, you know, damaged because a lot of Republicans don't support it. So it's
It doesn't sound like the initiative process instituted by the progressives under the leadership of Hiram Johnson around 1911 is being used to further the goals of the population against the corporations anymore, is it?
Absolutely. No, absolutely not. You know, Schwarzenegger's really hijacked the process using corporate money to buy initiatives onto the ballot that, you know, that benefit the corporate contributors in a way to raise more money for his run for re-election.
Okay, right? Now that we've raised the issue, or used in the same sentence, corporate money, re-election, and Schwarzenegger, maybe you could also address some other issues that actually have to do with drugs or quasi-drugs as well. The question of conflict of interest in the contract that the governor signed with American Media, sure. Inc., 2 days before he took office, under which he would advance the business interests of publications that make most of their money from selling, from advertisements for so-called nutritional supplements, which sure. are like steroids in some ways, or some of which are like steroids in some ways, and then vetoed a bill by Senator Jackie Speier that would have regulated those, and then gave back the future money, but kept the money he already had. What's up with the governor money and private interests?
And if I may just add one remark on 79 and then jump right into this.
Sure.
I want to just add is that there's one really exciting component of Prop 79 that we didn't touch on, which is that inside Prop, and I think this is what the drug companies fear the most, is that inside Prop 79 there's a section that makes profiteering and huge drug prices illegal. And it opens up the companies to some legal problems over gouging for prescription drugs. And as we've seen, that the drug industry controls the FDA and drug approval processes, and is because of that they've taken dangerous drugs to the market, they've controlled Congress, and they make a lot of money, contributions to the state.
I think Frank Norris called this the octopus.
The octopus, right. They are the octopus. But the one thing that has gotten through the octopus guard is lawsuits that hold these companies accountable, including this big case against Merck on the Viox.
$253.6 million.
Now that, you know, it's a lot of money, but that's about that much money is less than, I did the calculations, about 1/8 of what Merck spent on advertising and alone in 1 year. So is that enough to scare them straight? No, but by opening up new legal problems for them on gouging for prescription drugs, that is the great balancer. It's the one area, although they're trying to undermine legal attacks on them in Congress.
Right.
It still provides this anti-profiteering piece really provides a new strategy to help go after drug companies that are gouging and charging too much for their drugs.
Okay,
so that's a really exciting component.
Now, but that would only take effect if Prop 79 passes and passes with a larger vote than Prop 78,
That's correct. That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It would seem, before we get back to Sacramento and corruption there, the question of the drug octopus not controlling the judiciary yet. It controls the executive. It alleged to control the executive, alleged to control the legislature, but it doesn't control the judiciary, at least one court in Texas so far.
Yeah.
Where I guess a jury voted.
Right.
How important is that as a sort of an enclave or a beachhead that still exists for public protection against this particular brand of huge corporation?
Well, I mean, outside of things like LARX and bulk purchasing that takes these companies on in their market playing ground, I think the courts are the only vestige left where we can actually take the companies on a somewhat equal playing field.
So how important does that make the staffing of courts where for the people who make the decisions, or although I guess in this case it was a jury that made the decision?
It's immensely critical to provide, well, not only the staffing but for also access to make sure these courts cases can go forward. I think that what we'll find as this thing develops is that this anti-profiteering component in Prop 79 is the thing that the drug company talks about the most. And the question is how they actually bring it up and how they're going to spin it.
Right.
But I truly believe that, I think the drug industry...
Say a little bit more about that provision. What does it say?
Well, essentially, it's very concise and it's attractive in its brevity. And essentially says that it's unconscionable, it's illegal to charge excessive prices for prescription drugs, or to profiteer, to make too much profit.
Didn't you or someone at your organization write a book called Corporateering?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Jamie Cord, our president here, wrote a book called Corporateering.
Was he in some way an inspiration for this provision?
No, actually, I drafted this provision early on.
Okay.
And as we were looking at Prop 79, and I'd written this for as a standalone, but also to be included.
And they took it up.
Yeah.
People do it.
Yeah, and so it leaves a lot of questions over, like, well, what is too much,
and
how we determine that. But it makes it illegal to profiteer. Now, and that's what's exciting. It allows us to have that discussion about what is too much in a public forum, in a court. And create those standards.
So it essentially tries to raise the prominence of the legal concept of unconscionability,
right?
And say that can apply to corporate profits.
Absolutely,
as well.
And you know, we think it's absolutely defensible. Here we have, you know, like six drug companies that own 90% of the drug patents, which are totally unregulated. So we have an uncompetitive marketplace that has no price competition. You know, is charging these obscenely high prices, that their profits are 4 to 7 times greater than the Fortune 500 average. This is an industry that needs to be regulated, needs to be controlled, and going after the profiteering and the price gouging is a incredibly important new strategy to making drugs more accessible to the people who need them.
So if Prop 79 passes with a greater vote than 78, then there'll be more discussion of both the concept of unconscionability and that concept as it applies to drug
profits. Absolutely. And the interesting thing about it is that even if there are legal questions about other parts of Prop 79,
right,
this section is severable, so it could survive on its own.
Okay. So that's what the proposition is now. Talk a little bit about what forces are revealed by the fact of the Schwarzenegger American Media drug supplement nutritional supplement question.
Well, you know, I think it just brings up the issues that our organizations through the ArnoldWatch.org website have been raising for some time, which is that, you know, despite Schwarzenegger's promise to change politics as usual, that he didn't need money from corporations because he was rich enough on his own, and that if he took their money, it would be inappropriate because they'd want something in return. All those promises were campaign rhetoric, and unfortunately, he's violated the intent of his cleaning of politics. I mean, basically, what we're talking about here is a supplement industry that is selling either steroid or steroid-like drugs. Is through this magazine paying Schwarzenegger millions of dollars a year, and then lo and behold, last year Schwarzenegger vetoes a bill that would regulate these drugs.
Now,
I mean, that's quid pro quo at its clearest.
Well, then why hasn't there been an indictment or hearings or an impeachment or a recall?
Yeah, we've pushed for. There have been whispers of recalls for a while. We pushed the Attorney General and others in the state government to do investigations. I don't know the status of that now. I think we might see that after the special election. There's been a lot of the folks in Sacramento, as you've probably reported on, are not so much focused on their day-to-day job, but getting out of Sacramento very quickly.
That's
so
right.
They can campaign against the special election. I definitely think we're going to see more investigations into this. There may be federal probes. It's unclear, but it's what we do know is that this is just the beginning of this scandal. But at its core, it's one of the cleanest and best examples of a quid pro quo of an industry buying support from an elected official that, you know, it seems for some time in California.
Now, is the problem that the existing laws aren't strong or clear enough, or that the people who've allegedly perpetrated these misdeeds are so clever they're able to get around them, or that the public doesn't care, or if someone's a celebrity, not only can they get off on personal charges, they can also bring that aura into the government and get away with things there, too?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of everything. One of the key issues at stake here is whether it's technically illegal or not for a governor to have a second job.
Or a third job.
Or a fourth job. Now, when it was Gray Davis,
right,
you know, or if it's the Speaker of the Assembly,
right,
these guys have, you know, I don't think Gray Davis didn't, but other politicians have second jobs. The difference is that Schwarzenegger's celebrity gets him jobs that pay him $8 million.
Right.
So it's the level of the conflicts are much greater. The other question is just, is the legal investigation into the quid pro quo. Despite the fact that it's not illegal for the governor to have a second job, it is illegal
should it be illegal for the governor to have a second job?
You know, I really truly think it should be. I think that when we put people in the legislature and in the governor's office, and we pay them a good salary, although Schwarzenegger technically waived his salary, which is ironic given the fact he took $8 million from this other company. But I think when we put people in elected office, we deserve all of their time and all of their attention. Schwarzenegger and others have other jobs. They take other payroll. And I think not only for the conflicts problem, but just for the fact that the California public deserves the full attention of our elected leaders, that
okay.
they should be
allowed to have. Right. Now, there's a whole other ball of wax that talks about these nonprofit organizations that get money from private corporations and then subsidize things like a hotel suite for the governor, and the idea of tax-exempt groups aiding the governor, and they get their money from private corporations, and the whole system is unaccountable. Is your group, were you personally getting involved in any aspect of this?
We do a lot of work here. I spend most of my time on that issue and on the aspect of how that reporting works and how it should work. I spent a lot of my time recently on the prescription drug and healthcare work, so I don't have all the details.
Right,
but
it's a general proposition.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's a question of playing by the rules and transparency. Unfortunately, the governor has been able to use existing law to hide where the money's coming from and where it's going to. I mean, we know a lot of where it's coming in. There's so much money that it can't be hidden. I think the governor's now raised about well over $50 million that's coming into office.
I'm looking here at an article in the Daily Independent online, which talks about how First Lady Maria Shriver's personal attorney, George Kiefer, heads a lobbying group for an Australian firm bidding to put a liquefied natural gas importing plant in Ventura County.
Yeah.
Are you aware of that?
Yeah, we call that LNG Gate.
Right.
LNG is a market symbol for natural gas. And yeah, this is one of, you know, we could spend a couple hours just talking about all the conflicts. So we'd reported on this on our ArnoldWatch.org site a while back. And essentially what's going on here is there's some shenanigans with connections of people connected to Schwarzenegger and those that are trying to secure state contracts for natural gas. And that is another appearance, again, of money attempting to influence public policy.
And apparently he also has some of his gubernatorial staff being paid by his campaign organization.
Right, there's crossovers between the staffing of those that do supposedly the people's work in the governor's office and are paid by taxpayer dollars. There's been a lot of reporting on this that people like the legislative secretary, who was formerly a Chamber of Commerce lobbyist, was seen flying down to a campaign event in the early afternoon. And the LA Times reporters, I think, flew with him. And he was going to a campaign event at a time when he was supposed to be negotiating with the legislature. And the governor was saying that the legislature refused to negotiate with him. Now, there's probably a lot of truth to that, but the fact that his lead negotiator was flying in the middle of the afternoon to a campaign event, shows that the governor wasn't being very genuine and honest about those negotiations.
Didn't former Secretary of State Kevin Shelley get driven out of office in part because of allegations that his workers were working on campaign activities when they should have been working on state business?
That's right. Yeah, these are kind of problems that we see in politics probably going back to the
Caesars, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. But the difference is here is that, one, it's the scale. Schwarzenegger is used his celebrity to raise a lot more money a lot faster than anyone else has done before. So the size of the problem is exemplified here. The other thing is that, you know, Schwarzenegger got elected by making promises during a recall that said he was going to change things, change the system as usual.
Well, apparently he has changed the system.
Exactly,
as usual.
Just in the other direction.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Now,
instead of a broom in the campaign, it should have been a big vacuum.
Well, that's on reverse.
Right, exactly.
Two other specific issues, and then maybe you could address the general principle here. There's also an article in the guest op-ed piece in the Daily Independent, which refers to Red Bull energy drink, that the governor is associated with that, and now he may have to sign or veto a bill excluding junk food from schools.
Yeah.
And there's also the Terminator software, where if he takes a certain action to more heavily regulate the most violent video games, that's likely to help sales of his slightly less grotesquely violent video games. And is it possible for a person to have so many business interests and still function with any kind of integrity as a chief executive of the largest state?
No. I mean, these are clear examples of conflicts, and the existings of these conflicts violate the intent of the of campaign laws that are supposed to protect policy from the influence of money, and that this simply can't achieve them.
I was going to say we might need a monk, and I'm thinking back to Jerry Brown, who in some ways either came across as or was detached from all of these kind of worldly concerns. But apparently the people prefer to elect people who are celebrities.
Right, and which is fine. But the difference here is, I think people were learning a lesson, is that people like Schwarzenegger can say one thing that sounds great and act well when running, but then use the celebrity to do opposite, the exact opposite. In addition to the examples that you listed, there was another one that we had done a lot of work on, where Schwarzenegger was in a couple of his advertisements. There's some product placement of from companies like Arrowhead Water and some soft drinks from companies that had contributed to Schwarzenegger.
Are you saying in his political
commercials?
In his political ads.
Yeah.
Is he getting money from them for the product placement?
He got money for something, and they're being rewarded for something.
Are you talking about the one where he sits around with the cross section of the population, and he's sitting at the table explaining why he wants to build up reform so he can build up California? There's a bottle of water there.
He's sitting in a school cafeteria,
right.
I think. Yeah, and so there's lots of different products, and this is on our Arnold Watch website. You can go and read about this and the video game issue you raised as well. And there's a lot of these products sitting on the table. Each of the products is connected to a company that have given to Schwarzenegger. When we raise this, there's a lot of reporting on this. The Schwarzenegger folks claimed, by coincidence. We shot whatever was often on the table. We didn't really pay attention. Well, then there was a lot of reporting on political ads, and, every political advert guy that came on said, look, you never do a political ad without knowing exactly what's on the table and where it's coming from and what the connection is because of potential liabilities and blah, 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 blah. So it's really hard to believe from someone like Schwarzenegger, who is, a master at stage management.
And as a professional actor who works in movies with product placements.
All the time. Didn't know, or it was random. Come on.
Okay. Well, why don't we wrap up by building on the fact that we've been talking about television commercials an awful lot during this this conversation. What's the sort of ecological niche of these television commercials in the political system in California now, and who's paying for them and designing them, and how important a determinant of what people think and vote or don't vote for or against is this, and is there anything that an individual or a group without access to the huge amounts of money necessary to design, produce, distribute these television commercials can do to have any traction within the political process?
Well, one, we know that most people get their news from the news television, huge percentages, and the drug companies know that as well. The special interests that promote policies that are good for them but bad for everyone else know that. They spend a lot of money hiring the best Hollywood production companies and PR firms to design ads that hide what's really happening in an initiative, but play on what they perceive are, the psychological
psychodemographics
that people have, and to push one way or the other. And they spend millions of dollars, tens to 20 millions of dollars, to flood the airways with it.
And in fact, all of this is within the context in which transportation policy is driven by ubiquitous ads for SUVs in pristine surroundings with happy families without any concern about how much the gasoline costs, and drug companies that do direct-to-market advertising of products that people may not necessarily need, and focuses on schools as a site of cell phone and clothes exhibition.
Right. I mean, you have
and
the new marketing is going for cell phones for 7 and 8 year olds because the rest of the market has been flooded.
That's right. So try to place political marketing in the context of the general marketing project
and how that
impacts politics and government.
Well, I think clearly this year, with all the money coming from big corporations who want to diminish the political power of labor unions, who for the most part are out there to protect the common worker. And drug companies spending so much money on to inoculate themselves from real reform. I think in this season, political television advertisement is the pinnacle of advertising. I mean, it's the most valuable and probably the most highest salaried advertising going on.
Because it in fact affects the legal structure under which the other advertising can take place.
Right. I mean, these special interests are essentially selling a product to fraudulently selling a product to the public. And to do that, you need to get a lot of television, and you have to hire a lot of people to disguise what the product really is.
Okay.
And they need that to happen in order to change a law that will, in a way, that will get them more money, so next year they can come back and do this even to a greater degree.
So given all that, what alternatives exist for groups that don't find this project as
alluring? Well, one of the things that we're finding extremely exciting, because we don't have the money to get on television to buy ads, so obviously we use a lot of free media and creative ways to draw attention to issues. For instance, last week we brought some live pigs to the an HMO merger to demonstrate the feeding at the trough.
Right.
We probably got, maybe tens of thousands of dollars in free media advertising.
I don't know how. Right, Jerry Rubin brought a pig to the nominated Pigasus to run for president in 1968.
I didn't know about that. The pigs are very popular in the consumer
world. As a metaphor.
But the other thing is that we've done, which is, I think is we're very excited about, is internet outreach and creating messaging on the internet and these flash animations that are very viral that people feel compelled to pass to another. So it's a self. It's organizing very efficiently millions of voters through the internet in ways that people can view something in a way, something new and exciting, a flash animation that tells a story in a compelling way, then has them do some action like sign a petition, or sign an initiative, or make a phone call, and then spread it to others.
So you're essentially arguing that organizing the population through the internet could stand as a countervailing force against manipulating the thoughts of people through television advertising.
I think it helps to push back. The other thing that we have, I mean, the bottom line is that ultimately we trust the voters. You know, the drug companies think they can bowl everybody over with kind of a shiny advertisement, but we know that. Voters are very savvy, and when they find out when it's the drug companies that are funding this stuff, the red flag goes up, and that's usually when people, instead of voting yes, they vote no. So part of it is internet outreach to countervail with our own message in a way that's highly efficient compared to television spending, which we can't afford. And then also, relying on the facts and the truth of what's behind these through media and kind of the more traditional outreach.
Okay.
But ultimately, Mark, I have to tell you, it's going to be one heck of a showdown in November. There's so much money, and that will be, and we're so far outgunned that we really do need people who listen to this program and who are outraged by what the drug companies are doing to go to our website and get involved in the e-advocacy, spread these messages, and be involved on the internet to help us outreach. It's really going to require a revolt among voters who say, enough is enough. We not only have to beat this thing, we really have to send a message, beat these initiatives. We have to really send a message that we won't stand for this bastardization of the initiative process.
Much as you're relying on the internet here, I would like to refer people to an interview I did yesterday with Jim Baller, who's a telecommunications attorney, in which we talked about internet duopolies, in which cable companies and telephone companies are putting through the same processes that we've been talking about here in terms of prescription drugs, have been creating for themselves a playing field in which they control access to the internet, which could, of course, should the scenario that you're picturing here of an aroused citizenry organizing itself through the internet to defend its and expand its rights, could be shut off when corporations that control the internet are able to regulate it, dominate it, shut it off, or do what they want with it.
I mean, there's always the next thing that's going to be the threat, right? So, I, certainly as, you know, if in fact these, you know, internet organizing is successful as we hope it can be, you would certainly have to expect that the other side is going to try to use its wealth and power to cut off that communication effort. And
so
I would certainly, you know, it's an unending process.
Which, of course, was when the internet was first started in its intermediate stage between being a national defense project and a commercial venue, that's how it was intended.
Yeah,
but now it's become a corporate entity, and we're sort of, the spiral keeps rising up. So thanks very much for talking to us today, and hopefully we'll have millions of people listening to this, and they'll get aroused and get the internet, and they'll organize themselves for lower drug prices and free government.
Yeah, take the first step at www.consumerwatchdog.org.
And good, it's a cute animation, I recommend.
Yeah, there's a second one up there we call the Pig People from Outer Space, PPOs, which is all about how health insurance companies are ripping us off.
All right, I'll go look at it as soon as I put this interview up on the internet.
Great, thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Take
care. Bye.
Bye-bye.